Okay, girls, today I'm giving you the inside scoop on my favorite place to save this spring. At Ross, it's the spot to get everything you need at prices you'll love. Because when you find brand names for 20 to 60% off other retailers' prices, you'll definitely be finding your next favorite outfit and more. Trust me, you don't want to miss out on these deals on your favorite dresses and tops. And at this price, you might as well throw in a new purse or pair of shoes too. But Ross isn't just about savings, they're about giving back. This year, Ross and their customers raised over $4.1 million to support the Boys and Girls Club and local youth programs to help kids and families thrive. Seriously, just visit your local Ross and see for yourself, because I know you like to keep your closet full and your costs low. So what are you waiting for? Say yes for less at your local Ross.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to five pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
Welcome to the 40K Lorecast. Me, John Barsotti, and Brad Chester.
This guy.
Today's episode will conclude our coverage of Tau, so I never have to speak about them ever again. Just kidding.
I just want everybody to know that we definitely had to take some time between these two episodes to let John get his chi back together.
Yeah, John had some Irish coffees. He feels better now. Tau. Anyway, I'm kidding, guys. I don't hate them that much. I just don't like them.
He 100% hates them that much.
Yeah, but before we begin, as we discovered a week ago, we don't tell people what our podcast is and when it comes out. So again, the 40K Lorecast is a weekly cast on 40K Lore that releases every Monday at 7 p.m. ish in the Eastern, because that's when we send to Spotify, iTunes, Xbox, and others. I don't know what time it actually arrives. On my phone, I usually see it around 7:10. But anyway. With that, for those of you who are listening on whatever your device, including the Xbox thing, if you could like and comment on it, it would really help us out a lot. It's great seeing the comments. I said I have to read them.
For whatever reason, the metrics, though, pushes us out.
It does. It moves us up in rankings quite a bit, which they're not of that much value, but other than people just see us. And it's kind of cool to reach further and get out there. Additionally to that, as we always point out in the show notes, you'll see a few links. One of them is our Discord. It's totally free. Everyone's welcome to join. It is a behemoth that, candidly, I would have burned to the ground rather than manage it. But Kevin, Maisie, Brian, Ethan, who spells his name wrong, Steve, Ryan, Trevor, and David have stepped up. They are the moderators for our Discord and are doing a really, really good job. I love that I can go in there and not have to deal with problems because they already dealt with them.
It's also been structured differently. It's become so much bigger than it. Bigger and better. It's easier.
Yeah, better is the key thing, because bigger happens, but it's really been better. We made this as a place for people to be able to interact directly with Brad and I, because it's hard to do in general. Didn't want to list our cell phone number. One of us lists his email. Good job, Brad.
Nothing bad's happened because of that.
But the whole idea of the Discord was originally to have a way for people to kind of interact with us, give us feedback, ask us questions, tell us what we got wrong. And then it's grown, it's blossomed into a community. Right now there's over 25 channels devoted to everything from the cast itself, playing the game, people's favorite lore and literature. We now have a space where you post a picture of your pet, which, by the way, I've looked at every single one of your pets, because I'm a massive pet person.
12 out of 10.
Yep. Oh, fantastic. And it's just a great place that if you're into 40K and want a place to interact, come on in, and you don't get all the nightmares you get some of the other spots. So, links in the show notes. Lastly, though, for those of you who are, this game is not just about lore, it's actually about playing the tabletop. Brad has a coaching service. You can go to our website, the40klorecast.com, and there's some details about it there for more. But with over a decade of coaching experience and 30 years of playing the game, Brad's quite the resource in it. And he really does do a great job of helping people not just play the game better, but understand the game better. More importantly, though, let's feed the bots, Brad. There are lots of hot singles in an area, and they need to know where to send this email to. So go ahead and send your email out.
Old man, Brad. 40k@gmail.com. I cannot wait for more spam to show up.
Yeah. So if you are at email 1732GHRIRIPQ2 at godknowswhat.com, feel free to email Brad whatever you're trying to sell. He'd love to know about his UPS package that's on hold. Maybe there's a few. Oh, have you won a few like coolers?
I've got multiple. The fake IRS one, where I have to.
Ooh, you owe the IRS money. That might not be fake.
Not from that email. not from that email. IRS knows right where to find. Yeah. IRS doesn't go to the other email. It goes to
the correct email.
The correct one. They're not trying to spam me. They're like, we know where you are.
Yeah, we'll find you. All right, let's finish off Tao. So I think after the last one, we did a good enough job of covering what the Tao are, who they are, etc. Let's talk about the Tao warfare, because this is a main thing about the Tao. So the Tao mantra of war is really one of two ways, but there's a secret hidden third if you played in certain editions. So the Tao namely prefer diplomacy over war. They do not want to exterminate something because they could add to the greater good.
Well, they want to continue to grow. They want to, the thing is that the Tao want to grow hugely because they didn't know how small they were until they got a taste of the Imperium.
Well, and one thing it's interesting is, and they don't really cover this very well on any of the lot of the races in the galaxy, but it's hard to know what the Tau reproduction cycle is. So there is an element.
They've quickly populated multiple systems,
though. They have, but is it just with them? Because the problem is Vespid. We know Vespid and Kroot go fast.
True, but there's a huge Tau population on all of them.
There is, and they add people.
Because each one has its core. Each system has its core planet, which is all Tau. Yeah,
that's right. I bring this up because one of the things about Tau is this is why diplomacy, in my mind, was so important to them. Is that they're trying to catch up to the Imperium, which is impossible functionally.
No, but they had no idea how big it was.
That being said, though. The Tau, if they do encounter someone who they realize are not going to understand the greater good, they shift very quickly to the other side.
Now, this is one of the things that change a lot. If you read early third edition codexes, even the fourth edition, Tau was not so quick to show people.
They've always done this. You're right. But in their recent books, originally it was, if it's orcs, we smoke them. But everyone else we talk to. Now it seems to be like there's a quick message sent. Hey, do you want to learn? It's like Jehovah's Witnesses. Like, can we talk to you about the greater good? And if the answer is no,
they instantly smoke show. They kick open the door and they beat you with a bat.
Yeah, it's pretty
aggressive.
It used
to not be that, though.
Yeah, the reason this matters is that when we talk about the way the Tau wage war, they don't wage war by laying by a long battle, by holding ground, laying siege, occupying territory. They just want to completely destroy their enemies.
And they also want to get in and out. They're big about it. They're huge about it. They don't do pirate like Drakari style, but it's semi-close. They hit you with everything in the kitchen sink and then they just get the hell out.
Right. And my issue with that is so does everybody.
No. The Imperium will grind you down.
No, but the Imperium grinds you because they have to grind it. What I'm getting at is that with the Tau philosophy, the Tau military philosophy is we're going to lie in wait and then we're going to strike very suddenly and devastatingly to destroy our entire opponents so they can't fight back. Walk me through who doesn't do that except for orcs. Like what the Tau just describes our military philosophy is to have the most successful victory. Yeah, man. So does everybody. It's
true.
Just
they do it on the light. I mean, the Imperium is completely willing to just go, we have so many more people.
Yeah, that's the difference. The Imperium can grind it, but like, walk me through the difference between the Tau military strategy and the Eldar one. I'll pause.
No, not really.
There we go. That's what I thought. It's like even the Tyranids use the same general thing. I'm like, we'll just overwhelm them, and then there's nothing left. So, I saw it, and I went, that doesn't make any sense. But, back to the Tau battle. So, the Tau have like two styles depending on which of the castes is present. And they're pretty similar, but a little bit different between Mont Ka and Khao Yan.
True. And then
it's all the same concept.
Let's say what they are first, though. Yeah. Because Mont Ka, the killing blow, while Khao Yan is the patient hunter. And these are...
Cough, cough, the same thing. Continue.
Semi. Not on the board.
I like how this is my first cough of the day that wasn't actually a real cough.
I know we have been hacking up a lot.
Brad and I have been coughing the whole time, so like, there we go.
But it's a big thing on this because you have entire schools. I do this going, like, if you go really back in
the history. Let's just get this over with. All right. Mont Ka means I'm going to lie in wait and hide from my enemy. And when they reach a certain spot, I'm going to attack and the trap is sprung and I get them. Khao Yan is the exact same thing, but with bait.
But you have to be
walk me through the difference. Tell me how that description wasn't correct.
Kind of.
It's the same thing. They both, little cowardly Tao hiding behind a little, hiding in a bush with a railgun, by the way, awesome weapon, waiting, and either it's I wait till the enemy arrives, or I make the Kroot irritate them, and then while they chase the Kroot, I then do
it. And then we shoot.
There's no difference in the and I get mad at it because they spend a bunch of time trying to draw these out in the codex as you're reading about it, and every time I read it, I go, yeah, man. It's the same strategy.
Mont Ka is more aggressive completely, though.
Still. Yeah, but there's not like a third one where it's like, oh, what if we just do overlapping fields of fire with artillery?
It does make a difference when you're talking about the suit armies, though. So because they will drop down on you with Mont Ka and go.
Versus waiting for the Khao Yan. Again, guy gets chased while he chases the crew in the valley and then dropping drop down. On it's the... Khao Yan is Mont Ka. It's just a little bit later. And I say that. Also, read the rules. They tend to be the exact same rule. Just you either get it in battle rounds 1 and 2 or 3, 4, and 5. It's what? The same benefit, though, right? Yeah.
There is a different benefit because you got lethals versus explosions.
Yeah. I'll be honest. Their third method's way better of just 3 riptides on top of a building with 30-plus shield drones hidden from line of sight under the building and making everyone angry.
You are never going to let 8th edition go.
No. No. I mean, Invisible Wolves is still worse.
I mean, everything in 7th edition was worse.
Invisible Wolves is the worst thing I've ever heard.
But it was really irritating.
The 8th edition thing?
It's kind of acceptable. Because you couldn't target them.
Yeah. Well, so... Sorry.
Ooh. You've got opinions. I do love how bad touched you got by that.
Yeah. So, you know what? We talked about it last time, about how Vespid are useless because the whole concept of them is the drones do it better. And I have to give this the Tau credit on drones.
Their drone technology is legit.
The whole reason they can do this Mont Ka Khao Yan BS is they in theory, Lord of Tabletop, this does make some level of sense. They're better at scouting than any other army in the game because they've got, in theory, dumb insects that they don't use, but what they really have are drones.
And their drone technology is next level.
Insane. And I'll give them credit. So, because just like you know, your father or grandfather, the Tau are super into their drones. And if you don't know why I'm making that reference, go blue, you're laughing. The average drone owner is 55 years and older or male. So, the Tau are basically your dad. they've got the weird hoof feet, but they actually wear New Balances.
For sure. with the grass stains.
With the grass stains. But let's actually spend the time on drones. As much as I'm a crap on them, the drones are actually one of the coolest parts of the Tau in my mind. So we don't know when they were invented, but they are extensive throughout the Empire. There's over 25 variants just that I could find. My guess is there's more than that. And the drones do everything. There's like clerical duties, mobile aids to help people basically walk, obviously weapons of war. And
they have everything too. They have drones... missile drones, gun drones,
they have like literally like they have hologram drones that let you like kind of talk to somebody. They've got drone technology is amazing. Yeah, guys ride them.
The defensive tactical drones that they have, the recon drones,
shit drones. The drones are probably one of the most important parts of the Tau style of war, and we'll get into the why in a minute. But so first off, let's just describe them. So for the most part, they're, you know, 1 meter or less with features on it, you know, for whatever task at hand. Some are bigger, like the Remoras are actually much larger, still a drone. But the main purpose of the drone is what I would call enhancement, because Tau struggle pretty badly with the size of their force. Next to maybe Votan, and I'm not even sure on them, they're the smallest in the galaxy.
By a, exponentially.
Yeah, the Tau, I mean, the math on this was a little bit tricky. I'd go to Reddit for some of this help, but the math is there. There's about 20 seps over about a over about 100 worlds. That should put them somewhere between 100 and 200 billion. And this is total population.
Yeah, which is also like the number of guardsmen we lost this year. Well, yeah, that's it.
Necromunda is 10 billion. You know, there's 32,000 hive worlds within the Imperium, and Necromunda is the largest one at 10 billion, but let's say it's 5 billion. Still quite a lot. Kamara has more people in it than the entirety of the Tau population.
Oh, yeah.
The Astra Militarum is 3 to 6 trillion people. So 1,000 to 1 versus the Tau, or 100 to 1. Still. And then orcs, Tyranids.
Who knows?
Like the Tyranids could eat them tomorrow and it would be like, oh, whatever. But this is why, again, it's an issue I have with Tau being like, I think they're insignificant. But the flip side is the idea is that the drones are what make them significant. Because while we only have, let's say, there are 200 billion Tau, there might be 400 billion drones.
With pretty advanced tech in them, too, for what they're supposed to do. And they get very specific on them.
Yeah. And we can even talk about a couple of them real quick. Because you have, obviously, you've got messenger drones for, you know, moving video logs. The big ones, though, are like repair and manufacturing drones, where they're actually building stuff for them.
It's big on both. I think that they're actually... I would separate these two because the repair and manufacturing are too wildly different. Because the repair drones are pretty sophisticated drones that will instantly battle, start repairing stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, mid-battle, you take a shot, the drone pops out like R2-D2. We know where they stole all these ideas from. You know, they start repairing the X-Wing. I mean,
instantly.
Yeah.
And it's a big deal because they also never went through a dark age of technology and anything else. So they're finding and utilizing every piece of tech they can get their hands on.
Yeah. And that's actually talk about that because that's important. Due to the dark age of technology, the Imperium doesn't use AI. The Eldar, due to psychic powers, don't have a need for this type of stuff. There are two people who use AI in the galaxy, and that is the Tau and now the Votan, which, again, we're going to do a cast on Votan, by the way, guys. We want to wait for one more codex because one codex is just not enough. We're guessing, for lack of a better phrase. But let's talk about the Tau AI. So the drones are an active AI. Each are a little bit different. It's described in the books as having the intelligence of an animal. My issue with that is, like, do they mean,
what animal?
Yeah, dolphin monkey or ostrich panda. Fun note. Did you know the ostrich is the dumbest animal?
I just like the fact.
And the panda, which doesn't surprise any. Panda, they're cute as hell.
I love watching pandas just consistently fall down.
Yeah, pandas. Whenever you tell someone that pandas are one of the five dumbest animals, they go, yeah, I can see that.
Just donking itself all the time.
We spend, as a species, we spend probably billions of dollars trying to make them not die out.
Yeah.
And they're just actively, they're like, eh.
Whoops. It's their Three Stooges level shit going on.
There's no value. But anyway, back to the drones. So these drones AI, they're somewhere on this like animal level of intelligence. But they're not true AI in that they're an independent body. The AI is there more as a backup system because each has a drone controller.
Correct, when it's linked. But when you lose that link, it will then...
That's what it's for, so when your drone controller is alive and giving you directions, the drone does exactly what it's told to do. But should that link be severed, they go to some default programming. And there are a few different options for drones in general. The first and biggest one, as we were discussing, is recon. These are, 1 meter, so 3 foot discs. That's really small. Like in the sky, you cannot see that. So they also have scout constantly.
Pretty awesome maneuverability on the drones, too.
Oh, yeah. And plus camouflage technology.
Yep.
The Tau really do, in theory, I mean, they'd be up there with a LATOC in the sense of being prepared for a battle. They know who their opponents are. They know what their opponents are armed with. They know everything they need to know about their opponents.
And
that's
huge
because
about it,
that's because of the drones or if they want to send their weird insect army to go make a bunch of loud noises. Well,
it's a big deal because of the fact that, again, there's not that many Tau, so the commanders want the perfect strike for their Mont Ka or Kayan.
Yeah. You know who else wants the perfect strike? Eldar, Drukhari, Space Marines, Votan, GSC, Necrons, Admech, all of them. Every single one of them. Except for Orcs and Tyranids. Hell, Tyranids probably do. Oh, and World Eaters. World Eaters probably don't care that much about the exact perfect strike. But I feel like everyone, you know who does? Abaddon.
Pretty good.
Feel like, yeah, just throwing it out there. Like, it's like, this is, I know the Tau players are hating this, but I'm just being honest. All the stuff they talk about, the Tau's method of combat is to try and kill their opponent while not dying. Like, that's basically what they keep saying.
Pretty awesome with the recon drones. Come on.
They are, but I'll give them credit. They're better at it, but their goal is the same. You know what drones
they have, which are a real big deal? Gun drones.
Yeah, we'll do gun drones. So every Tau vehicle gets to shoot more than it should because it's got these gun drones on it.
Yep.
Even some of the battlesuits do too, right?
They come with them.
I don't play Tau. I think that was obvious.
You can assign drones with them, people.
Yeah, and so these drones will have extra guns on them that interact with the pilot, giving them these basically an AI weapon.
And they used to be able to just separate and go on their own merry way.
Yeah.
You know, so I like the idea of this and their gun drones because they supplement the fighting force.
Yeah. I mean, it makes sense. The idea is that, you know, what's a Space Marine floating tank with a billion guns on it?
Repulsor Executioner.
It just makes, like, how many pilots are in that thing?
A lot. They've got gunners for every gun.
That's my point. It's just kind of weird. Where the Tau have similar output, but just with one guy in there and AI taking care of the rest.
Yeah, well, it's AI. They have AI targeting and gunning.
It makes more sense. The next one, though, is Battlefield Assistance, which is everyone's second least favorite drone, the Marker drone.
Hells yeah.
These things are, conceptually, these make a lot of sense, and then the rules writers have jacked them up pretty bad. The idea of the marker drone is just like exists in modern warfare. You put a laser mark on something, the missile knows where, and the missile lands on it. Basic concept. That's all a marker drone's for. The idea of this is that the vehicle can send the marker drones out, they add accuracy, and then you hit harder. Airburst cannons. This is 9th edition complaints.
Only at the beginning. They were so ridiculous at the beginning.
Yeah. So what ended up happening with this, unfortunately, from a rules writing standpoint, was this: they would allow someone to shoot something they couldn't see with perfect accuracy.
Full rerolls.
Yeah. 18 D6 shots from out of line of sight.
Ignoring cover,
hitting on a 3, I believe, with full rerolls.
Plus 1 to AP because you'd be in Mont Ka.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was busted.
Yeah.
The worst thing, sorry, GSC, your codex came out directly before.
Oh, yeah, GSC was made point. They actually, this is a funny story. Gene Slaughter Cult got a codex that was, everyone was reading it with horror. Like, this is the greatest thing I've ever seen. Like, they were going to absolutely be a terror on the tabletop and kill everyone. 3 weeks later,
less than a month.
Yeah, a Tau Codex came out that made the GSC army unplayable.
Yeah.
Just genuinely unplayable.
Pick it up.
Yeah, there's no joke. If I bring 2 Crisis squads with Airburst in it, your GSC army doesn't exist.
Just on the board. Deleted them.
Yeah, that was funny.
I do like this, though. I like the idea of this. I hate an indirect in the game, but the lore on it's fantastic.
It makes complete sense. Exactly. The battle suits are hiding behind a wall. They can shoot up through the ceiling.
And legitimately AI-guided.
Yeah. You send a drone to sneak around and mark the enemy for them so they can, like, to the patient hunter, to hide and wait and then just attack suddenly with perfect accuracy.
From out of anywhere.
It makes complete sense. Just, oh my god, in the tabletop. And the amount of shots was oppressive. 18 D6 from one squad.
Let's talk about drones that keep you alive.
Okay. Obviously, I've been complaining about shield drones a lot. Let's do this. I hate them. I hate them. I hate shield drones.
Shield drones are badass.
I hate them on the tabletop.
I know you hate them on the tabletop.
I hate them in the house. I hate them with a mouse. I hate every single thing about shield drones. There's no part of shield drones that I like.
I love them in the lore.
No, they don't make sense in the lore. Okay.
Because they get in the way. It's a force shield.
Nothing works that, nothing moves that fast.
I don't know. I've seen a lot of Star Wars. No. Lightsabers are blocking that stuff all the time.
So let's do this. A shield drone from description sounds like, so it's like a mobile force field that protects things. Yeah, that would make total sense. You have a shield drone nearby, you can invulnerable save because it gives you a little bit of protection. No. A shield drone is a drone that suicides itself into a gunshot.
Sometimes it doesn't suicide. It just sometimes lives.
Yeah, we're going to get there. We're going to get there. But we're talking about the 41st millennia where people are shooting light at each other. So this apparently, and I'm going to explain why this is so stupid. I shoot a las cannon, which is firing the speed of light at you. The Tau drone therefore moves faster than the speed of light to get in between that shot and you. Hold on, I'm not done yet.
John, Hold on. Shield drones are Jedi.
Hold on. It gets worse. The Tau, as of the 41st millennia, don't have faster than light drives.
That is also true.
Technically, the shield drone moves faster than anything in the Tau army fleet, anything.
It has to anticipate the shot.
You can't anticipate light.
Obviously, the shield drone can.
Oh.
Because it's a Jedi.
Yeah. I'm just, like, if it's shooting a missile, fine. I'm okay with it.
I'm having Sniggs write down Jedi names on all of the shield drones first. You're about to have your shot stopped by Mace Windu, the shield drone.
Yeah, an Eldar Brightlance somehow can be intercepted.
Yoda's about to jump in the way. Drone.
Oh, this is so annoying. And then for those of you who don't know what happened in 8th edition. In 8th edition, these things were prevalent. And the reason I hate them so much is they just made a mistake on the rules. That's all I can explain it. The way it would work is I would roll a dice to see if I could hit you. Then I would roll a dice to see if I would successfully get through your armor and wound you. Then you would roll a dice to see if your subsystems protected you from that attack. Then you would roll another dice to see on a two out of six, to see if it hit the shield drone instead. Which, okay, that's what the shield drone's supposed to be for. Let me get there. That's the shield drone is supposed to be a, it got in the way. I didn't like the first part of this, but it gets worse. Then, sometimes you could also roll one more time. And on a 1 in 3 chance, the shield drone that just took a las cannon to the face would go, actually, I'm good. And wouldn't die.
No, the sucky part is when you got hit with a volcano cannon.
Yeah.
And your 15 to 20 damage became 1. And then a 5+, your shield drone felt no pain and was fine.
Yeah. Volcano lance shoots a beam of light that could, in theory, cut through a spaceship.
Oh, easily. You're harnessing the sun.
But a less than 1 meter wide drone got in between it and the volcano
shook
and,
it off.
And all the extra damage went shoulder shrug. I hated this rule at the time. I hate everything about this.
It also sucked because they had 20 of them.
20?
Oh, with each guy.
Okay, there you go. I was going to say, no,
it's
those blobs
that were there.
Was it Brian was his name? The guy who wore the sweater vests? I think he brought like 60 to one event.
That was so nuts.
It was something like that where he was like, these things just can't die. So, all right, rant over. Let's spend some time on just IP violation things now. battle suits.
Gundams?
Yeah.
We'll be right back after a quick break.
Okay, girls, today I'm giving you the inside scoop on my favorite place to save this spring. At Ross, it's the spot to get everything you need at prices you'll love. Because when you find brand names for 20 to 60% off other retailers' prices, you'll definitely be finding your next favorite outfit and more. Trust me, you don't want to miss out on these deals on your favorite dresses and tops. And at this price, you might as well throw in a new purse or pair of shoes too. But Ross isn't just about savings. They're about giving back. This year, Ross and their customers raised over $4.1 million to support the Boys and Girls Clubs and local youth programs to help kids and families thrive. Seriously, just visit your local Ross and see for yourself, because I know you like to keep your closet full and your costs low. So what are you waiting for? Say yes for less at your local Ross.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
One of the most iconic elements of the Tau are their battle suits. This is another area for people who, you know, don't understand where the Tau hate comes from. A lot comes from this. I'm going to be honest, though. I don't watch anime. If you do, I don't do you. I don't care. I never got into it. So when GW tried to capitalize on the Gundam and a lot of that stuff, it upset. I think there was a good population that felt it was a cash grab. I'm not one of them, and I complain about enough stuff on the Tau, so I'm not going to complain about this, and I'll just enjoy the battle suits.
I like suits quite a bit.
I think they look cool. What I'm saying is that for people who don't know, like, this is an area people do complain about a lot, but because I'm not one of those people, I'm not going to complain on their behalf. I just go with, I don't care.
Well, let's talk about the fact of the matter of the suits, though. Mm-hmm. Because effectively, all Tau are in a battle suit.
Yeah,
every single It just depends Tau. On how big of a battle suit you're in.
Yep. And the battle suits, we talked before about Tau technology, are amazing. They use this thing called a Neuralink. Every battle suit is linked to its wearer by Neuralink. So where there's embedding in the skull of its wearer a piece that interacts with the suit they're wearing. So instead of a giant carapace organ that kills the user half the time that they put it in there, the Tau just went with, hey, let's do this.
And it works instantaneously every time.
And perfectly. So maybe that's what the Sisters of Battle were doing with their power armor.
Just not telling anybody?
Just not telling anybody. Like, oh, we mastered this technology. Look, the Space Marines are really into their black carapace. Let's just not tell them that we don't need that
you
anymore.
You do you.
Y'all feel free to have an organ that can reject and you all die. We'll just put this thing in our head and everything works perfectly.
One of the biggest things about it, though, is the Tau effectively almost use it as a second set of skin.
Yeah, well, it becomes their body. It moves with them. Why it carries no strength, I don't know.
Well, it's wild, though, because the suits, and this is some of the writing's really, really good on this, because Tau, as they get farther into battles, they raise up in ranks, they will get the larger, more powerful suits. Some people stay with the same suit forever, like Stealth Team sometimes.
By the way, it's not hard to write good stuff on this when it's already all been pre-written like all of Robotech.
But I like the idea of this brain interface having to be, it's a big deal when they change suits, you know?
Yeah.
Style of suit, because this has become your second body, your second skin.
It is, and I like, they do write this out, again, it's all, this crap is so stolen. I'm sorry, it just is. But the way that they interact with the suit, it's not just that the suit feels them, but they actually can feel the suit itself. So, like, they feel it walking on the ground. They feel the impact of that. When the weapons fire, they feel the kick. They even feel, like, they talk about they even feel pain when the suit gets damaged. Not, like, heavy pain, but enough so that they know that there's pain.
Yeah, they get the sense of what happened to the suit.
Exactly.
Which is a big deal on that. Like I said, it's a big deal when they change suits. People go up.
Totally. And then the suits themselves, to Brad's point earlier, really do advance. They've got, basic things like, they've guns, they have flight, they have camouflage. The Neuralink's really important because these suits, for like a regular soldier, is just a suit. It's got two arms, two legs, and I'm holding a gun. But when you get a bit bigger, now the suit has a camouflage feature that has to be turned on and off. You can fly. You've got extra arms.
Multiple guns. Yeah. Multiple arms.
Yeah. And so over time, the Tau soldier has to kind of get used to this style. Unlike Imperial Knights, which we'll cover in a future episode, the Tau also, these suits become somewhat interchangeable for them. So an Imperial Knight... Well, once you link to a knight, that's it. You don't then jump to another one next week. It's more like I guess it's Pacific Rim in that regard.
You get a bond.
Yeah, whereas the Tau, It's just, yeah, I have my Neuralink. I turn on Bluetooth pairing.
But this is, for me, one of the things, and we're going to talk right now more about the suits, but one of the things that's wild for me is the Taos technology is advancing so quickly that they can't even keep up with putting new stuff. There's tons of people, like in the game, you have all the prototypes. You read about a thing. They have better stuff. They just can't manufacture it fast enough because they keep coming up with
newer and better
all the time.
Yeah, and I do like where the Tau do this. So, like a Fire Warrior, for example, which is their warrior class, they start with basic armor, effectively. And then after 4 years of service, they can do what's called a trial by fire ritual. I have no idea what that is. I have no idea what it encompasses when I say I don't know what it is. If they do that, then they can start become a battle suit pilot. They, and what Brad mentioned earlier, from that point on, as they are more successful in battle, they can either choose to stay with their current battle suit or upgrade to the next one, the next one, the next one. What this does for Tau is it means that their most expensive and best equipment is only being used by someone who's proven themselves time and time again.
Superior, experienced, war-hardened veterans.
And we'll cover this when we get to the Imperial Knights cast, but this is one of the big knocks on the Imperial Knights, is that because you have to link to the knight, the person using the knight gets experience, but only with that knight.
Right.
So you may fight a Titan. Well, Titans have more than one crew, but you might
have a city inside of it.
Yeah, but you would fight an Imperial Knight. You could, in theory, fight an Imperial Knight who's never been in combat before.
Now,
whereas is it Taunar? Is that the big one?
The Supremacy suit.
You fight that. The guy in the Supremacy suit. You're his 900th battle. So it's theoretically the Supremacy suit probably should, on average, Rumple stomp an Imperial Knight because just the pilot's just so much better.
Yeah, he's been fantastic.
Again, all credit where Tower good. That's cool as hell. Now, let's spend a little bit of time on the suits themselves and some of how they're used. The biggest one to me are the stealth battle suits because, as we said before, the Tower giant cowards. So
these guys are forward deployers with top of the line stealth technology, dispersion fields. They've got excellent
Centurion dreadnought.
Yeah. Sneaky, very sneaky.
Very, very sneaky. Yeah, no, the stealth suits are really cool. So the idea is that the stealth suit actually doesn't just make you camouflage, because don't forget, very few things in 40K actually use their eyes to see you. It'll actually camouflage you electronically. Now, small flaw in this logic, how do you camouflage against warp sight when you're a non-warp entity?
Well, you think you can.
Maybe if I just sit here very, very still, I won't see me. But that's one of those ones where I'm nitpicking. You can poison Necrons, there's night fighting for Space Marines, whatever. That's fine if stealth suits can not be seen by demons of Khorne.
And the stealth suits have a fairly impressive amount of weaponry. They're the smallest of the battle suits. I mean, obviously, Fire Warriors are in armor.
Right, but they're meant to be the smallest, and they serve a massive purpose on the tabletop.
Also, if you want to check them out, watch the Exodite on Warhammer.
Oh, yeah, you're right. It's a stealth team. All right, let's get my PTSD out of the way in these next couple. The Crisis battle suit. Oh,
it's the most common.
It's the most common.
It also comes with the widest array of possible weapons.
Not anymore.
Oh, that's...
Not anymore. Oh, I know how upset Tau players were when 10th Edition Codex came out because they had to really break their models.
But still, even in lore and on the table, they at least have the most option of...
They do. And just for people who I'm talking about. So the Tau... Crisis suits for a long time. You had three weapon systems you could put on in any combination whatsoever. So people would build them with the three best systems. But when you buy these models, they would come with one of each. So if you just bought a pack of three, you could give each of those three one of each battle system. People would spend extra money. They use 3D printers, whatever it was, and they would make them with three of the top one. And GW realized that wasn't a good thing. And so in the latest codex, for the first time in the history of the Tau, they made that not doable. And so a lot of players who'd put a lot of time and effort into building and painting their models had to break them. So the Crisis suits, though, are, they're probably the most famous looking of all of them.
100%. They're also the most common for Tau.
Yeah, they're used because they can be adapted. The beauty of the Crisis suit is that, and I like the term crisis, they basically create a crisis. It's not, they're not used for a crisis.
They rapid insertion them. They can show up. They're very fast. They can jump down.
And their weapon systems, it's not just the weapons, but also there's other systems like targeting systems, drone controllers, all this stuff come in there so that when they're deployed for maximum efficiency.
And I think that the Crisis suit still probably has the most customizability with the commanders and stuff like that.
I'll give the Tau credit here. The way the Tau wage war is meant to be one of like, I know my opponent. And instead of nothing in the Tau army is meant to be a take-all comers. Everything is meant to be, specifically targeted, and then we're going to use these specific pieces in combat. But let's talk about the real one.
The big boys?
Screw Riptides. Screw Riptides. Screw Riptides. They're big. They have a very big gun. They're hard to kill. And they were the bane of my existence for years. But they do look awesome. Yeah. I think it's one of the top two best looking models in the thing. If you don't know what they look like, did you play Robotech or Rifts? Because Tau, Tau has some models for you, and GW has some explaining to do in court.
You got some explaining to do. Yeah.
I mean, the Storm Surge and the Taunar also look amazing, but
those are so huge.
Yeah, but the Riptide is
Riptide's iconic for Tau.
Yeah,
I'd say Crisis suits are the.
Crisis suits are the meat and potatoes. The Riptide is, the coup de
grace. It's the flash.
Yeah, it's like the Riptides. And they've actually had really great rules on their guns that have made a lot of sense. The Riptide comes in. The idea of the Riptides, the Crisis suits kind of come in mass. The Riptides come in selectively.
And they come from the rear. They're firing and moving up.
And they have giant guns. They're very quick. I mean, the Riptide is borderline an Eldar weapon.
Yeah, I mean, kind of. To be honest with you,
they can move. They can move that fast. They hit that hard. I like Riptides.
And it's a big thing. And then you've got the broadsides.
Yeah, which is the same thing.
Just a heavier walker.
Yeah,
it's a kind of a smaller version of the Riptide, almost. To be honest with you,
I hate both of them.
Well, it's using their heaviest weaponry though. You know what I mean? With the heavy rail rifles.
It is. Yeah, I mean, all right. Let's spend some time talking about the one thing on Tau I really do like, which is their tech. Their tech's awesome. They're just nothing. So we said before, like, the Tau were like often caught trading with other civilizations. It's not for food.
Yeah.
Because I'm assuming the humans in Tau have different digestive systems. Probably. Like, I don't know what the Tau eat, but it's probably not corpse starch. Who knows?
Gross.
But anyway, the Tau are known for trading weaponry. That's what you do with the Tau. And it's because they're... Weaponry is them and like Dark Eldar, probably the Votann now, are the most advanced technology in the galaxy.
Yes, and in a lot of we talked about it a little bit in the Eldar cast. The Eldar weaponry is more advanced, but a lot of it worked in concert with Psychic.
That's my point. The Eldar technology to me is not as impressive because they've got an extra boost to it, whereas Votann, Drukhari, and Tau can't. So to me, it's that weaponry is a lot better. Main one, I mean, there's so many, obviously. You've got the anti-grav technology. This allows their vehicles. The thing about, when we talk about Tau anti-grav, that I like pointing out is, it's not just that they can make a flying tank, because people can make a flying tank. They can make a flying tank that can fire a gun that should be on a spaceship with accuracy.
Yeah, they do bring the big guns, and they mount them on several different types of chassis too. So it's fairly impressive on that. And one of the things on the Tau technology is, I'll just go in contrast with the Imperium technology, is all their stuff safe. The Imperium is just super okay with you overloading things and just blowing yourself up.
Oh yeah. I mean, the Tau plasma does this really cool thing called work.
Yeah.
I mean, Tau plasma is probably one of the most famous ones in it, because Tau plasma, you just sit there and everyone else has plasma that will overheat on occasion and blow up the user, sometimes other people near it. Nope. Tau plasma just works. And Tau plasma also works at multiple levels. When we talk about Tau plasma, for example, Imperial plasma is a very large unit. You've got plasma guns and plasma cannons, and they're both big, giant backpacks. The Tau, their fire warriors, who are effectively guardsmen, carry a plasma gun. It's a pulse rifle. A pulse rifle shoots its pulses of plasma.
And their plasma technology is light years ahead.
Yeah. Their ion technology is the next one, although note that in a second. So ions is when they just use magnets to shoot compacted ionized particles at something. This is technology that primarily is used, that the Imperium uses on knights and on starships.
I was going to say on ships.
The Tau use it on walkers.
Yeah, I was going to say on tiny vehicles.
Although, interestingly, in the last, I mean, this is very new, the Black Library book that came out, I mean, it's like less than a month ago, I think it was like in September or October, they point out that the Tau got this technology from the Votan. That is
very new, though.
I mean, it's very new. So the Tau have been using ion technology for 7 editions now.
Exactly.
And now, within less than a month from time of recording, it was like, oh, by the way, they got all that from the Votan. So, just pointing out. But I have to call it out because I do know it. But the Tau also do use from sci-fi standpoint, my favorite gun that exists, which is a railgun. Why? Because I played Battletech. You know, and Mech Warrior. Yep. Railguns, I love railguns. I will never not love railguns. My favorite, it's just, I don't know why. Everyone's got their thing. My sci-fi thing's always been railguns. And the Tau not only have awesome railguns, but it actually is a railgun, as opposed to the weird Gauss that the Necrons use, which is not Gauss at all. This is an actual railgun.
And it does damage.
Yeah. Although, just do know, for those of you who ran hammerheads with railguns and missed,
whoopsie,
the tears of your sadness, they warm my soul. Cover that in a second. The Tau railgun is, so a railgun, for those who don't know, a railgun uses magnets to shoot basically a super heavy slug at incredible speed at something. And the slug can either be a solid piece that'll just blow through something, or can be an explosive tip. And to GW's credit, in 9th edition, they made these things amazing.
They did gigantic damage.
Yeah. In 9th edition, which is the edition prior to this, they had what I believe are the perfect rules. If you had one, if you successfully rolled to hit your opponent and to wound it, that was the end.
Yeah, there was no save.
There was no saves. We went right to damage. And the damage it did could one-shot a tank off the board, which is exactly what a railgun could do. Now, the fun part was they also could re-roll this if they missed. This is why Brad knows why I'm laughing at this.
If you're in Tau Sept.
Yeah, you could re-roll this. And to my great joy, all you had to do was on a 1 out of 6, roll a 2, 3, 4, 5, or 6. And I played against people who would somehow roll a 1 twice in a row. They were so sad. And I would just laugh.
I was saying, you were so sad for them.
I'm not going to waste our time here, but I had a guy literally lose a game because of it. Because he did that and left stuff out there. And then the counter explosion I did back with my fire prisms took out half his army. Anyway,
let's go into the expansion.
Let's go into true Tau. Well, let's do Tau. Tau. Yeah.
Trow Tau?
Yeah. Let's go into Tau history.
How now, Trow Tau?
Yeah, sorry. All right. So let's talk about the Tau expansion. So as we said, the Tau were the most advanced race in the galaxy, but that's everything but space travel. They could do plasma, Gauss, AI, anti-grav, rail, but they actually struggled even to get anywhere even much closer than sublight. They couldn't even get the sublight speed initially. They had giant ships.
There was just big ships that took forever.
Mm-hmm.
So they have their expansion takes place in spheres. They do spheres of expansion, which are effectively...
There's a word neither of us can pronounce on camera, yeah. Into a microphone, by the way. Sphere?
Sphere?
Yeah, yeah. Because I think we both had sphere and sphere each. Yeah, so each expansion is called a sphere. The reason why is because they actually go out in a spherical pattern. They're not, you know, they're trying to, it's the Tau, they want to expand evenly.
Yeah, they want to expand evenly because one of the biggest things about their military and everything, they want to make sure that they can't get logistics disrupted. Yeah. They don't want things behind them effectively.
And to that point, as we just said, they don't have, they never mastered like high-speed space travel. So they kind of need to have the logistics. It's easier to expand, you know, almost linearly out in an even pattern because it's that way all of your logistics are kind of pre-taken care of. So the first sphere of expansion was 1,500 years and started in M37 and ended near the end of M38 and was a massive success.
Oh, it's huge.
This is the one where they got the Kroot, the Nikasar, the Thraxians.
Well, I also think this is one of the biggest things because this was such a huge success. I think it pushed the Tau more for the greater good. Obviously, we're so successful. Everything's working out perfectly. Our worldview is the way.
Exactly. And they also, the big one here is that they actually wiped out the orcs who were in this sector during this period of time. So at the end of this, the Tau genuinely felt the galaxy was just for their taking and they're ready for it. So they set the Earthcast to work to create a new spaceship engine. And this one was able to get them to not quite light speed, but just sub light speed travel. Again, they could have used shield drones, apparently. They're faster. And 200 years after the end of the first sphere, the second sphere began. This one lasts actually almost twice as long at 2,500 years.
This is the majority of Tau.
Yeah, and this ends in M41. And much like the first sphere, it started off to incredible success. They tamed the Vespids, thanks to the Ethereals. Their encounters with the orcs continued to be in a good, you know, situation for them. And then they actually ran this really great race called humanity, who, you know, were in the perfect partner for them for spreading the greater good.
Well, which is a big deal because they met humanity before they met the Imperial Navy. Well,
they didn't know what it was. Well, that was the thing.
They traded with humans for a long time.
Oh, for probably, I mean, it might have been
hundreds of years.
Yeah, hundreds, could have been 1,000 years, where the Tau met the, because these are fringe colonies of the Imperium. These, I mean, at this far out, the Astronomicon's not even that bright anymore. That's how far away from Terra this is. And over time, though, the Ethereals made a mistake. And the mistake the Ethereals made was they began trading with humanity, and the Ethereals felt, well, these people are in struggle. We should bring them into our fold. And the Ethereals reached out to the humanity and explained to the, you know, the water cast it, but it was the Ethereals.
Well, it's a big deal because they told these fringe colonies that are probably getting little or no Imperial aid because, again, they're fringe colonies.
Yeah.
And they're like, hey, we can help you out. And those people were like, awesome.
Yeah, I love help. And so they came over and they left the Imperium for the greater good. Fun story on the Imperium. The Imperium doesn't care. Yeah, the Imperium's viewpoint on a fringe colony trading with Xenos for technology is like, hey, don't do that, but whatever. That colony leaving the Imperium to join the Xenos forces is called a crusade.
There's some heresy amok here.
Yeah. So the Imperium discovers this. They don't say a word. They just begin the Damocles Crusade. And the Imperium sends at least, this is what I was counting, 7 regiments, one of which was a Cadian regiment, which is no joke. They did not, you don't send Cadians unless you're really preparing for war. 10 Space Marine chapters, multiple battle cruisers, and just a ton of support. And the Imperium wrecks the Tau initially.
Bad, bad, too.
Like, the first couple planets. And to be fair, the Tau think what they're interacting with initially is the Imperium. They have no concept of how big this thing is and what it could bring to bear. The Imperium just exterminatuses these planets to nothing.
Well, it reclaims some. It flatlined.
Well, it reclaimed them and executed every single human on them.
True.
For you know,
yeah, they did put some to the torch.
Yeah, right? I mean, like I said, they either exterminatized it by actually bombarding it from space till it was an ashen rock, or individually exterminatus to every single thing on the planet. But either way, there was an elbow room left over afterwards.
And well, this left everybody in a weird thing. So the Tau originally had no idea that Big Brother lived there. So the Imperium came in, dick swinging, and just smoke festing them. But the Imperium also didn't know what they were dealing with either, because they had only hit fringe resistance at first.
Well, and that's what happened. Brad's really right. The Imperium got way too confident. And they then went, okay, these guys, the Tau, have nothing on us. Let's go take them out. And they push in. And they push, instead of out of a... because the first few worlds they hit were former Imperial worlds. They then went to a planet or a system called Dalyth, D-A-L-Y-T-H. So we'll go with Dalyth. They went into Dalyth, the Dalyth, whatever. Dalyth was a Tau world. The Tau had colonized it a long time ago.
This is a big deal.
Yeah.
It's like us. Don't touch the boats. Yeah. Don't touch the actual Tau world.
Yes. Yeah. And they get to Dalyth, and immediately the war grinds to a halt. Just in the initial engagement, four capital ships. I think one or two chapters got wiped out.
Oh, they
were not ready for what the Tau was bringing back.
They were Voltroning ships.
Yes. And this war eventually devolves into a ground war. And the Tau begin using tactics that the Imperium's not used to, which is effectively every city, the Tau can't hold it. The Imperium just blasts through them. But everything that's not a city, everywhere where there's cover, the Tau battle suits are just a nightmare for the
Just
Imperium.
Showing up, hitting, leaving.
Also, the Kroot become this thing. And this war drags on for months and only concludes because the High Fleet Behemoth enters the galaxy. It's not here. It's a little bit further.
Yeah, but they also got the note from home that you're redeployed.
Yeah, you're redeployed.
Stop screwing around with whatever you're doing.
Yep.
Get out.
And the Imperium negotiates a ceasefire with the Tau, which they do, and they leave. Both sides lost and won. That's why it's an interesting one. For the Imperium, they won by taking back the worlds and body checking the Tau. The Tau win by actually holding their own and defeating the Imperium, but also lose because they discover that their plan, all the plans they had for the galaxy are gone now. They cannot defeat the Imperium.
They start gearing up though. This is a big deal too, because I actually think that the Tau war machine would have slowed down if they wouldn't have had this battle.
No, the Tau, they're just too small.
No, but I'm saying for the size of their, I think that they would have, their military would have been a shadow of what it is right now if they wouldn't have had this happen.
Oh yeah, it's true. It did speed them up.
Because they knew that, oh, we need real shit. You got to think that up until this point, Tau's undefeated and everybody they met. And
let's spend a little on why that is. Because the thing about Tau is technology is great, but technology without tactics and leadership's not. Has no value. And the real reason that the Imperium ground to a halt at Dalyth, or Dalyth, whatever, is Commander Puretide.
Commander Puretide's a boss. Yeah.
Commander Puretide is probably, no, he probably is the greatest tactical mastermind the Tau have ever had.
We'll be right back after a quick break.
He got his chops destroying orcs. Just absolutely, like almost no casualty fighting orcs. He actually took over the defense of Dalyth, and he's the reason why the Imperium just couldn't function, because he was so good tactically. Because as we said, the Tau were probably outnumbered in this battle 10-1.
Yeah, except for the fact that they had Hannibal.
Yeah, just leading the way, and the Imperium didn't really know how to handle this. Now, the reason that Puretide's so important is more his legacy. So what he does is great, but his legacy is where the Tau Tau's story gets a bit more interesting. As we said before, Tau don't live very long, and they're also not a very sturdy creature. Somehow, they don't explain how this is a sentence in a book. Seems to be some sort of raider battle where he gets injured, like mortally wounded, basically. The Ethereals freak out when they see this, because they realize their best commander is going to die.
This is awesome what they did, though, because they effectively matrix him.
Well, it's awesome and it's not awesome. So, yeah.
I think it's pretty cool.
Part one's awesome. Part two doesn't hold up to math. But part one, yeah, Brad's right. Part one, they hook him into a machine and they just transfer his conscious into a chip.
PureTide chip.
Which is, you know, in the gameplay, is a PureTide engram chip. It's something you can give your commander to make your commander better. It's because they're putting this engram chip of PureTide's thoughts into the commander. At the same time, though, the Ethereals weren't sure if this would work. And they decided, well, we have to preserve his leaders. And they realized, like we said, that Tau don't live very long. So all of the people who learn from PureTide would be dead within 100 years. So they decide, there's three of them, Farsight, Shadow Sun, and Caius. I'm not saying their real names. And they take two of them and they shove them in stasis, which is Caius and Shadow Sun.
They do a weird like vampire type thing. This is an underworld almost where they rotate through who's effectively out.
Yeah, and this is the issue I have with this is just the math in this doesn't work because Shadow Sun gets involved with a bunch of battles where it looks like she's might be out for like 15, 20 years at a time.
Yeah.
And then she went back into stasis. I'm like, right, but it's still a running clock, guys. Like you don't get it reset each time you go into stasis.
Yeah, Shadow Sun's been in a lot.
Yeah, Shadow Sun's probably 180 years old. She's dead, but she's not. You know, Caius, I think PureTide.
There's a reason why Farsight's still.
Farsight's fine. Yeah, Farsight's fine. So, actually, you know what? Let's do Farsight now. Let's have some fun because let's just dive into.
Some Farsight.
Yeah, so the third sphere of expansion is kind of the part where the animals in the farm realize that they would be better under Farmer Jones. Sorry, wrong story. What? It's an allegorical novella about Stalinism.
Thanks, Archer.
This show's so good. Spoiler alert, it sucks! It's so funny. Anyway, the third sphere is where the wheels really start to come off the Tau Empire. The second sphere has just ended. They've realized that they're now at what they thought was a conquerable galaxy. They're starting
not
by
just
the way,
conquerable. They thought they were inevitable. Yeah, they were Thanos sitting it up here.
To be fair, the Tau are in the bottom right corner of the galaxy, like all the way to the edge.
Hold on. Eastern fringe.
Yes, yeah, so they're southeast of the center, whatever. So the bottom right portion of the galaxy, and their portion of the galaxy, more of what they touched was the dark space of the universe than the galaxy. So they don't realize how far this thing stretches to the left. So as they, the Tau just discovered that, because in their like trading with the Imperium and with some of the worlds they conquered, they got star maps. And that's when they discovered, and we move at sublight speed. So this is basically impossible. Yeah. But as we said before, the Ethereals are much more of a propaganda style leadership, and they don't want the regular Tau to feel that way. So they immediately decide, before anyone can figure out that this is kind of a losing battle for us, let's do another sphere. And they decide to make it even a bigger deal. They're going to bring Commander Farsight, who's PureTide's number one commander.
And his wallet says bad motherfucker on it.
Yeah. Oh, Farsight can fight. And so the idea was we're going to go reestablish ourselves as the greatest in the galaxy. And Commander Farsight's going to help us do that. And by the way, this writing on Farsight is very good. Very, very, very good. So we're going to, if you want to know more about it, there's books, numerous books on it. Actually, just the sixth edition bit was cool as hell anyway. Those are Codex supplements.
Well, this is Farsight had wild success.
Yeah. So period. Farsight goes up. He goes north. Yeah. From Tau. And what he's supposed to remember is supposed to be a sphere of expansion. So the idea was the Ethereals would mark, we want you to go this far up, this far left, this far right, this far south.
He just went straight.
Well, and he went straight for a smart reason. He went up, beat the orcs, and then notices that what their maps showed was an asteroid belt on the outskirts was actually an orc fleet. Because as we said before, orcs like to inhabit, space hulks.
And he said, I'm kicking the shit out of that.
Yeah, and the Ethereals said, no, you're not, get back here. And he didn't, which is the first time.
Well, he's also the farthest any commander has been away, the distance he's traveled.
Right. And so he attacks the orcs. And, you know, as the case with every GW story, there's a lot of success and there's a stalemate. And then he goes and meditates for a while, a.k.a. the Rocky IV montage. And then
he comes back and puts his boots a mighty ass kicking on.
And just says, I mean, he decides, well, what if we just burn the orcs from space?
Yeah. He starts ruining the orcs. Yeah.
Which, by the way, they're a fungus. Yeah, this always works. And the orcs just start getting wrecked and wrecked and wrecked. And he pushes and he pushes and he pushes until he reaches a planet called Moloch, which is different than Molech. So this one's M-O-L-O-C-H. M-O-L-E-C-H is the one the Emperor went to talk to the Chaos Gods. I had to call that out because it took me a second when I read it. And I was like, wait, is it the same spot? No. Molech, though, this Moloch also has deep roots of chaos. It's known as having a bunch of faceless statues all over it that predate the Imperium. So the reason this matters is, while fighting the orcs, a giant disc appears in the sky, which then cuts the sky open. And demons of Khorne descend on Farsight and his army. The Tau win this, but two big things come out of it. First off, every ethereal that was a chaperone with them...
All died.
Which is really, really important. The other one that's really important for Farsight is in one of the battles, he's fighting in like an old building, and he picks up a blade that's lying on the ground and uses it to kill the demons. Obviously, he didn't leave that blade there. The Tau didn't put the blade there. Khorne did.
Which is weird because it's still probably a Khorne blade, which is an... He basically picked up Stormbringer.
Yeah.
Farsight now has a blade that sucks the life force from you. If you've read the books, they're amazing. Elric's amazing.
Yeah, we'll get into that in a second. So
there's a reason why he's still alive.
What happens next for Puritide, though, is... Real, geez, what happens next for Farsight, though, is really important. There are no ethereals within light years of him. And his brain just starts to work differently. He's getting notes from the ethereals telling him to do something, and he's just going, no. Farsight's really far from even a single ethereal, let alone the main ethereals.
Right, 100%.
And the issue is that their affect on him is gone. And he begins to notice it because they start giving him commands to do things. And the ethereals don't talk to the Tau in a very nice way. It's extreme authority because they can mind control you. So they're speaking to him to Farsight in kind of a dick way. And Farsight's reaction is, no, I'm not doing that. This then leads to a crisis of faith moment for him, where he starts to realize that he always listened to the ethereals, even when he shouldn't have.
Well, this is why I love the Farsight, though, because Farsight, after having this come-to-Jesus moment, decides, well, if I go back, what are my options? Do I lead a rebellion? He's like, everyone knows, because of the teaching of their history, I don't want to shatter, because no matter what he thinks of the ethereals, that's still ingrained in him.
Well, because he knows, and this is where his biggest problem is that he realizes that the ethereals are bad. He realizes that they're manipulating the Tau and controlling the Tau to their own ends, oftentimes making the Tau do things that are not good for the Tau. But historically, they saved the Tau. Correct. And if you take them away, because it's also not just the Tau, the Kroot, the Vespid. I mean, the ethereals are the very critical glue holding the entire their entire empire together.
And Farsight is very pro Tau.
Yep.
Above everything else. Which is, he's a compelling character.
At the same time, he also has that realization of like, what the hell did I just go to war with? And begins to realize that the ethereals were pushing him less to not pursue the orcs, and more to not be on Moloch, which made him then realize they know something. The ethereals are aware of stuff that they're not telling us. And so Farsight initially builds up a little army. This is what we hear the Farsight Enclave. He fortifies this region of space and aimed some of his fortifications back towards Tau space, making it very clear that this is an independent part of the Tau Empire. No one has ever done this. He then decides to go on his own little walkabout to discover more about what's really going on in the galaxy.
Well, what the truth. He wanted actually the truth of what is happening in the galaxy.
Yeah.
Because to be honest, they didn't know shit about shit.
Yeah. Now, the leader of the Tau is a 3-year-old named Anva. We're going to get to in a little bit.
Anva's not furious anymore.
He's still mad, just not quite him.
I was saying, his projection?
Anva declares Farsight a traitor to the greater good. Fun story, though, about this is that I think Anva's viewpoint was this will work itself out because Farsight will be dead in 15, 20 years. I'll deal with it then. But as Brad mentioned earlier, the blade that Farsight picked up was a demon blade.
He's willing, Starbrand.
Yeah.
He's sucking souls.
Well, not anymore, though. That's the funny thing about this. So this blade, it's a blade of Khorne. And what it does is every time you kill someone with it, it sucks their life essence out of them and puts it into you. To this point, Farsight is now thousands of years old in the current form because he was wielding this blade. Now, he actually does at a certain point abandon the blade and goes on a walkabout.
He's got the blade in his hand right now in the game.
And which is weird because in the lore, he doesn't have it anymore. And then in the game, he has it again.
Well, he wouldn't acknowledge the fact that why he's still alive.
Yes, okay. You know what? And I could be wrong about this. I was reading into this quite a bit, and this is where I got confused. So the story is that at some point, he just puts the blade down and walks away from it. So I took that to be all the life essence that was put into him is just there now. So basically, which makes it the greatest blade ever. You should run there, kill a bunch of fools, and then just throw it away before Khorne can take you over and live forever. It's like all win, no downside.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
But in the game, he still has it. I don't know what they're trying to do with that. So, to be perfectly honest with you, to be fair.
Yeah, and they'll be honest. That's kind of it. Like, there's more on Farsight, but there's more books about it where he keeps trying to uncover the secrets of the universe. He never does.
Farsight books are good.
No, they're good, but just at a certain point, you're kind of like, oh, so does he ever discover what the ethereals are?
Nope.
Does he discover what chaos is? Not really.
No.
But does he randomly show up when the Tau need him most and fight?
With huge forces.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
He's actually got a shit ton of... Because you
got
to think...
He's got a massive force,
a massive force, which is primarily suits, though. Yeah, that's why they fight like that.
Yeah, and incredibly loyal to the Tau. Like, as much as he doesn't care much for the ethereals, he cares the Tau massively. If the Tau are in danger, he will arrive.
Yep, and the thing is that he's got a elite fighting force, because these are all veterans of many a war.
But the third sphere of expansion began with Farsight. With him leaving, Anva then decides, well, I'm not going to take a loss on my sphere, and he orders that Shadow Sun be woken up from stasis. Shadow Sun, this is annoying, because in my mind, so Farsight is Mont Ka, Shadow Sun is Kalyan.
Well,
luckily, as we said before, they're the same thing.
But the big thing about this is Shadow Sun becomes the poster child for the Tau.
Yeah.
Completely. They just everywhere you go, there's posters
Shadow Sun. And Shadow Sun can fight. I'm not belittling Shadow Sun. Shadow Sun's problem, though, is that she was woken up at a very bad time for the galaxy. Because we're getting very close to the end of the 41st millennia. So warbands are now orc wars. You've got Tyranids. Incursions are now hive fleets. Necron tomb worlds are awakening everywhere. And more importantly, humanity's not done with Tau. They had to leave for a bit, but they're still coming back. So Shadow Sun's able to have a lot of successes during this third sphere, but she's still not able to get any real success. Namely, she also has a pretty big loss in that the leader of Tau dying, which 5 minutes. We'll be there in 5 minutes, I promise.
The Tau peeps don't know that.
Yeah. Well, I guess they do. Oh, no, you're talking other than the Tau fans, yeah.
No, the Tau fans know that. I'm saying the Tau.
The Tau aren't aware of this. Yeah. And the problem for the for Shadow Sun, though, is right at the end of the third sphere, a Calidus assassin sneaks onto her ship and mortally wounds her. And they have to shove her back into stasis to help her heal. So Shadow Sun comes in midway through the third sphere and then finishes the third sphere back in stasis because she, you know, got wrecked. Not because she's bad. I want to make that clear. It's not because she's like an ineffective leader. She just came in at the worst possible time.
Well, the worst possible time is probably the fourth sphere.
Well, the fourth sphere is just funny.
I mean, the fourth sphere lasted about 8 seconds. Yeah. So
the fourth sphere of expansion, the Tau are upset. The Ethereals are upset that the Tau expansion just is not moving at the speed and rate it needs to. So they tell the Earthcast to make a warp drive. I'm assuming they got some of this technology from mankind, yep. And they just basically went to copy it. But again, the Tau have no navigators.
No Geller fields.
So they don't know what any of this stuff is. And if you've ever seen the movie Event Horizon, that's what happens next.
Yeah. Oh, to a lot of Tau, by the way.
Yeah, but not to one ship, to an entire fleet. So the Tau they build up this giant fleet where they're going to go into the stars with and conquer
which
land.
Also,
with.
This Tau fleet had so many prototype weapons.
Yeah.
All their
this was
going
to be game change. And they all get there and they all flip the switch on. And what happens is instead of them moving into the warp, all the drives interact with each other, overload it, and actually create a rift in the materium where all those ships used to be. And they're all sucked into the materium.
And it's not good.
Yeah, that's the end of the fourth sphere.
You gotta hope that a lot of them do a Drago. Can you imagine just Tau just fighting forever in the Imperium?
Well, they kind of do. I mean, that's the thing. So the next one from that would be the fifth sphere. I decided we're not going to cover that here, and the reason why is to cover the fifth sphere of the Tau, we need to give you a lot more stories of what's going on elsewhere. So for those who are kind of, you know, newer to the cast, or those who have been listening for a while, our plan has always been we're going to cover all the codexes effectively, and then we want to shift over and start telling the stories of some of the editions. And this
seventh edition, Gathering Storm,
It's like the
Dominus Crusade,
All these things, even some of the fifth and fourth edition stories lines. They're easier because, you know, like a good story writer, they weave in and out multiple races. So if we do a cast just on Tau, but this story is going to involve orcs, mankind, Eldar, all that stuff. So we're going to stop after the fourth sphere, and we'll cover the fifth sphere later. But we should finish with, is it Anva?
Anva.
Because the story of Anva is both, you know, critical to the current version of the Tau, but also is much more eye-opening into the situation of the Ethereals.
Anva's powerful.
Insane powerful. So Anva is the head Ethereal, who is, and the Ethereals are the head of the Tau. So Anva is the unquestionable leader of the Tau. He even had a model for a little bit.
Still has.
Shouldn't. You can't touch it.
I mean, there's two guys that protect the projector.
Yeah. So Anva took over from Anwei. This is like during the 41st millennia. Anva's main thing he was known for was that he always got his way. But more importantly, it's because he never had to correct anybody. Everyone, whenever they were in his presence, would always propose and suggest whatever it was that Anva wanted. So he came off as this incredibly benevolent leader, because every time you asked him for everything, he always said yes. It was odd, though, that people would actually go to meet with him to propose one thing, and then when standing in front of him, would propose a different one. No one to blame but yourself, though. Farsight specifically had memories of interactions with Anva that he thought were horrifying, because to that end, he went to meet with Anva with one plan in mind, and then suddenly would just say something totally different. So Anva obviously was mind control, better than anyone, basically projection level mind control. The problem with Anva is his ideas were largely garbage. He was not a good leader.
I think that he believed in the greater good, as far as I think he believed in Tau supremacy, superiority.
Yeah, but I mean it's.
when you believe you're just going to win.
He does, but in the same way the World War I generals did. You know, that's what I'm saying. Like, yes, he believed in it, but there was no reason to believe in it.
No, I'm not saying he's correct.
Yeah, he put the Tau into battles that were just sloppy, you know, or aggressive. That there was no chance for them to win these ones. And in my mind, he moved the Tau backwards. The problem, though, is that despite this, no one in the Tau can say anything. Because, first off, all the ideas weren't technically his.
Yeah, they also spin a wild web of propaganda about how all of these things are actually good.
Yeah, they're all good. And he ends up elevating himself almost like deity within the Tau, which creates a lot of problems, because you've got an incredibly ineffective leader who's effectively a deity within there. And he's so high up that the idea of not having him becomes a danger.
Don't worry, though. The Imperium took care of things for you.
Yeah, the Imperium saw this one pretty quick. It's called a Calexis. So in 999 of M41, which, by the way, is when everything happened in this game.
Yep.
Yeah. The Imperium and the Tau are at war. There's the closing days of the war. Anva decides that he's going to go boost the troop morale by going to the forefront of the battle to better assist Shadow Sun there. This is right about the same time a Caladius takes out Shadow Sun. The Imperium discover that Anva is on planet somewhere. And let's just say that became goal number one.
Yeah, when the target one.
When the absolute leader of your enemy is, for whatever stupid reason, on a planet that you're engaged on, you shift a battle strategy.
And the Calexis is fantastic because they can phase.
Yeah, I love this story. So the Officio Assassinorum sends a Calexis after Anva. Now, for those who don't know, we covered them before, but we'll give it real quick. The Calexis are nasty because they actually phase in and out of reality, so they can walk through walls. Anva is in a bunker deep in the planet. But again, the Tau don't work with the warp or really understand the warp. So they've built this thing, this bunker, to repel any and all enemy coming down the hallway. The Calexis coming in and out of the walls.
Yep.
Phasing into reality, slaughtering all the Tau there. Because don't forget, the Tau suck at hand-to-hand combat.
And the Calexis does not.
No. Eventually, the Calexis gets into the room with Anva, and all that is written about it is that Anva's death was neither swift nor merciful.
Yeah, that was probably not great.
Yeah. Supreme Leader is, so for the Tau now, the Supreme Leader is dead at the hands of the Imperium. There's a potential for the entire Tau Empire to collapse. So they decide the best solution is to make a hologram of Anva and load his essence into a computer program and make a digital copy of it.
And then he has two guards. Well, in lore, he's got more, but
yeah,
that basically keep everyone away from him.
Yeah, it's funny because they make those new rules passed on Anva. Yeah, you can never be around him without his honor guard next to him. You're never allowed to touch Anva. And the hard part about this is, I can't tell if it's just a hologram, like if this is a Wizard of Oz thing, or is it sentient?
They said they loaded his essence, so I have to believe that it's AI sentient.
That's what that's because we know with Pure Tide, they loaded his brain and his thinking into an engram chip. Why couldn't they do that with Anva? In which case, technically, he still is the leader and is still Anva. But then the more important piece was, would he still carry his ability to dominate people's minds?
Right.
Because the Ethereals have it. I'm interested in what they do more with this, if GW does anything with it. I think that the Farsight subplot could be really fleshed out. I would like to. It's a weird thing where, you know, it probably wouldn't be good for the game if they did it, but I would like them to flesh out and actually explain what the Ethereals are more from a story standpoint. You could ask them where then, you know, Farsight leads a rebellion because they discover what the Ethereals are. There's a lot of fun you could have with this, but it would also check the game.
Farsight's forces have also just grown. He has a shit ton of like Earthcast and stuff with him too.
Yeah. Well, because people are flocking to him because truthfully, if you can get away from the influence of the ethereals and you can think for yourself, you realize that Farsight's actually the most successful. And that's where I want to be.
By hands down. It's not even close.
But anyway, I think that's probably enough, Tao.
I love that you're. That's just enough.
That's enough. That's, you know what, we've covered enough. That we'll do more later. No, I'm kidding. I do hope for those of you who like Tao, this did a good amount of justice, and for the rest of us, this is at least informative. That's all I can give you. Next week, we're going to keep celebrating the holidays by doing things that listeners have requested, and we're going to do Space Wolves.
Oh.
Yep. There it goes. I was literally about to make the comment. Prepare to hear Brad's voice crack over and over as he does a Ric Flair woo.
And there's no chance that I'm ever going to even pretend it's Space Woofs.
It's Space Woofs.
Always. Always and forever.
For those just... All right, fun side note on this. Brad broke this army.
True story.
Yeah, true story. There is this army got a worse codex because of Brad. And what he did with them. So it's probably a two-part cast on Space Wolves. Until then, this has been John Barsotti and Brad Chester.
This guy.
Take care.
Six months from now, you could be running a 5K, booking that dream trip, or seeing thicker, fuller hair every time you look in the mirror. Through Hers, you can get dermatologist-trusted, clinically proven prescriptions with ingredients that go beyond what over-the-counter products offer. Whether you prefer oral or topical treatments, Hers has you covered. Getting started is simple. Just fill out an intake form online, and a licensed provider will recommend a customized plan just for you. The best part? Everything is 100% online. If prescribed, your treatment ships right to your door. No pharmacy trips, no waiting rooms, and no insurance headaches. Plus, treatments start at just $35 a month. Start your initial free online visit today at forhers.com/talk. That's forhers.com/talk. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Price varies both on product and subscription plan. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.